Hello and welcome to another episode of the IMRO podcast. I'm Zara Hederman. Thanks so much for stopping by for another fascinating music-filled conversation. As always, we're going in depth with some of Ireland's most exciting and engaging artists to get insights into their work and the ways it directs them in their daily practices as well. Today, we'll be hearing from the brilliant Elaine Howley, whose debut solo album, The Distance Between Heart and Mouth, released in 2022, was described in Pitchfork as an ad hoc collection of songs that draw their muted power from everyday ritual, a testament to the magic of not making plans. And there's certainly a lot of magic woven into that album, which was one of my personal favourites from last year. It's an extremely enveloping body of work, and I love returning to it. Myself and Elaine sat down for this chat a couple of weeks ago in the Sugar Club, where she opened for The Bonk later on that night. You may be able to hear some background sound checking noise throughout the episode. Hopefully that doesn't affect your listening too much. Elaine had joined The Bonk for shows on that tour at the start of the summer, and this pairing felt particularly special given their devotion to Ireland's DIY scenes and how they've both garnered international attention and acclaim for their distinct sounds in recent months. We covered a lot of different aspects to the Tipperary-born and now Cork-based artist's work, from writing music as a solo artist and how that compares to collaborating in a band dynamic, as she does with The Altered Hours, as well as the joys of experimental and improvisational play, as she has extensively explored with the likes of Crevice, Hellbox and Morning Veils. There was so much to talk to Elaine about, and I was conscious that her time to soundcheck was drawing near, so I was particularly keen to hear about the making of The Distance Between Heart and Mouth. We discussed the influences and the process behind that album and how making it ultimately strengthened her artistic confidence. So we'll definitely be keeping our eyes and ears peeled for whatever is next from Elaine Howley, because no doubt it'll be just as magical as what we've heard from her so far. Now, without further delay, let's delve into my conversation with Elaine Howley and hear from her on all of these topics. But before you do, thank you to everyone who has been returning to the IMRO podcast each month and enjoying it. Your support is always appreciated. We'll be back next month with more tales from the Irish music industry. Until then, here is Elaine Howley. Elaine Howley, it's lovely to be here with you in the Sugar Club. We're outside in the smoking area, which is nice and empty. Thanks so much for coming to chat to us.
Thanks so much for having me, Zara. It's really nice to be here. Yeah, on this sunny day, and the Bonk are warming up inside, and yeah, it's going to be great.
Yeah, because you were playing with the Bonk two nights ago, I think it was. So tonight, obviously, for a bit of context, you're supporting the Bonk here in the Sugar Club. How was the gig the other night? Because I can't think of two acts that I would want to see more in one night. So how has it been?
Really good. Yeah, I'd never played in Greystones before, and the theatre was lovely. It was all like seated, really intimate, and like a really warm audience. The lads were class. It was all drapes and mirrors, and I think it just added to like the sense. I felt like with their gig, and I was saying it to Phil afterwards, it just felt like this kind of happening. You know what I mean? It almost felt outside like the normal gig world or something. Just the way they play and the humour that they have, and so it was great to open up for them. And my folks were there as well, so gave them a shout out. And that was the first time they'd come to see me play solo, so I was kind of nervous that they were there, but it was also, yeah, it was really nice. Yeah, so I had a good crack, and it's nice to, I think it's nice to do a show when you know that you're doing it again, and we kind of all get another go at it tonight.
And you've been touring quite a lot as well. Like, only, I think it's the start of this month, I saw you playing at the Dream Baby Dream event that was on the Lighthouse. And that event, obviously, there was filmmakers as well. And you worked with Charlie Joe Doherty for his film, This Year's Lull. How was it for you working on that and making music specifically for film? And how did that collaboration come about?
So the Dream Baby Dream project, it was like a commission from the Regional Culture and Arts Centre in Donegal, and then Foggy Notions. So they brought together different directors and musicians, you know, to soundtrack their films. So I got asked to do it, and I'd never met like Charlie Joe before. I hadn't heard of his work, and then I started to look it up, like, and just the run up of that. And he had made beautiful 8mm film before, and I think it was, you know, from what I took from it, it was a lot to do with like masculinity and like modern masculinity in like a rural setting, and people being kind of like, I guess, like quite isolated, but like there was this kind of sense of like a youth culture, but like in a really like rural setting, and it's really striking work. And then I ended up having some Zooms with Charlie and just hearing about his plans for this year's LOL. And I think he was one of those people that, like, I don't know, you know, some people you just like speak the same language or you just really get them like straight away. And I felt like that with him, like the way he explained to me the way that he wanted the film to look, and I guess the way it kind of related to his own life growing up in Donegal, like kind of spending a lot of time in like cars listening to music with his cousin Gabriel, who wrote the film with him as well. And then they were, I suppose they were looking at boy racers and that kind of culture. And it was definitely like, there is like a sadness and a weight to the film. Like, I know you saw it the other night, but I felt like the way that they kind of portrayed it was, I don't know, there was a certain kind of edge to it as well. And it was not like coming direct at loss, but it's kind of implied. And this young guy, Bambi's journey after losing his friend, when they've spend so much time in this kind of intimate setting of a car, looking out in these beautiful spaces. So I think because of how clear Charity's vision was, it felt like easy enough to make music for. Or I just started out by, I kind of made like a few folders and I just kept putting stuff into them and saying to Charity, like, whatever you like, just draw from that. Or if there's something you like, I can do more of it. So that sort of helped me to not feel like I have to make one specific sound. Or I always kind of like working like that, where, you know, where I feel like I can make a bulk of work and kind of draw from it, and it brings a bit of freedom. But yeah, like, I think that he was like happy with the kind of sound I was making. Like, he's worked himself with like cassettes and like he likes that kind of submerged sound. So it just felt like a really natural fit where we weren't, you know, sometimes I think it can happen where creatives are brought together and as much as you want to work together, like, it just doesn't like gel. Whereas like with Charlie, it just felt really kind of, yeah, it just felt like we were just kind of flowing along together. And there was a track, the kind of main track that I made for it was sort of, yeah, kind of from his direction about the type of sound that he wanted. Yeah, and it just kind of flowed. I just tried to really get into the mood of the characters and, yeah, and kind of make music from like their perspective. So yeah, it was a cool process. Like, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Like watching that film, and it's so moving, because like I said, like the main character is maybe about like 18, 19 or so, and just when your music comes in, it has that like very steady, almost like a heartbeat kind of palpitating almost in the background. That really adds, I think, then to when you go through something like that with grief and loss, like a lot of the sounds outside can feel quite drowned out and you can just feel very trapped inside your body. And I felt that the song that you made for it like really captured that kind of the fragility, but also the kind of defiance of that character too. I thought your music as well just fit so perfectly in like a cinematic kind of world, because I do find listening to your album, it's just, it has that lovely ambience that it allows you to create visuals and stuff. Is that something that you would like to do more, like more cinematic and film scoring stuff?
Yeah, like it was definitely a process that, yeah, made me think that it was an enjoyable thing, you know, that I would like to do it again. And like, I work a bit with Irene Buckley, like I've worked with her in Crevice and I've worked with her in Howl Books, and she's really accomplished like in that world. And she's definitely taught me about it even just by being around her and talking to her about her projects. So getting to do this, yeah, gave me a chance to try it out. I definitely would. I think the thing for me is always just like when someone kind of knows what they're getting with me and like the kind of sound that they're getting, like, I don't mind kind of going out of my comfort zone, but I know sometimes like there are certain parameters, like someone might want a particular sound that I just kind of can't capture. So I think it's nice when maybe you have, like, for me, like I already kind of have a palette, and that when people know what that is and they are like choosing it for their project, then I'm kind of happy, because sometimes there's just that fear that, you know, like that I just won't deliver exactly the sound that they want. Maybe something super slick, or, you know, I can kind of, yeah, you know, I've got getting better and better recording, but like, I definitely, yeah, after that experience, I'd definitely do it again, because it was so good. Yeah, like, as in working with charity was so good, yeah.
And like, you were talking there about like kind of the challenges and challenging yourself, and we're a couple of months away from the first anniversary of The Distance Between Heart and Mouth. How are you feeling like in that kind of time since, and with that kind of personal element too? When that album came out, you described it as a product of an audio diary kept on a 4-track cassette machine throughout 2019 and 2020. That must be such then a fascinating thing to have to look back on, and like tonight you'll be playing songs from it, to revisit the Elaine of that time as the Elaine of now, I guess the distance between then and now. Mm-hmm. How is that for you, and like that challenge of really delving into yourself and sharing that then? I know at the time when you're making the music, you don't necessarily imagine people hearing it, but now that it has been out there for a year, how has it all been?
It's been amazing. Like, it's been felt like a bit of a gift, like in terms of like, you know, yeah, I suppose, you know, recording in that way, sort of just going to the machine every day and kind of just capturing things, and maybe not, you know, overtly like planning to make a record, just sort of see what comes. And I guess the way that, like, yeah, the way that, you know, people have received it or understood it, and the places that it's brought me, and I don't know, it's kind of made me like catch up with myself. You know, I think albums have a way of doing that, where they sort of bring you where you need to go, or yeah, you're reflecting back and realizing that there's messages in there, that, you know, there's like a path there for you. And I think it's definitely been that kind of record for me, where, you know, I think in my mind, like the next thing for me, like that record was, I'm loving all the chords. It's class, but I don't know if it's gonna be okay for the podcast.
That's the ambience. It's kind of almost like vampire music in the background, which is kind of a fun dynamic, I guess.
Yeah, I'm hanging upside down like a bat right now. Me and Zara, we're like hanging off the rafters here. Yeah, I feel like the next step, I don't know, you know, you're kind of always looking for the next step, but I'm sort of, you know, for that, it was just like trying to get to the place of being vulnerable and expressing myself. And now I'm like really into like connectivity and, you know, trying to go like the next step, you know, like just, you know, trying to go kind of, yeah, just be as honest as possible. But definitely the, yeah, serving the record, which is what I kind of see, is like going out there playing and stuff, and representing it has been like such a fun experience, like so nice. I kept thinking like, oh, it'll be over, you know, I'll do 4 or 5 shows, and now I'm still playing songs off it, and people are still talking to me about songs off it. And yeah, so it's definitely brought me on a journey as like that I just totally didn't like see happening, and it's given me like a lot of a lease of life and a belief, I suppose, that like sometimes when you make stuff in your bedroom, and you know that like it will connect to people, and that it will move into your life like in ways that you didn't foresee. And I think like that's just a path I want to kind of keep following, you know, and just, yeah, it makes me connect with people in a way that I probably didn't before, and I kind of just want to keep trying to do that. Yeah,
because
yeah.
I did find it as well, like just kind of reading background to the album, and something you said as well was that you were thinking a lot about themes of silencing and communication, and wanting to push that out with music. And then there was an element of feeling braver with that. Did the album, how did that help? Because as you were saying there, like it can be so difficult to like be so frank and honest and like reflecting on yourself and just different ways that you've interacted with certain situations. In what ways have you found, especially now with a year kind of away from the release date, have you found that that has kind of helped?
Yeah, I think it's kind of, it's definitely, I don't know, I suppose like maybe we're all sort of on that thing, you know, you're just trying to kind of peel away layers and just sort of be, you know, just the most version of yourself like that you can be. And I think like sometimes that, you know, you do that work by yourself, of course, and you're trying to kind of, you know, occupy that space. And I think that's the place where like, you know, like the other people come into it, like the listeners or, you know, even talking to you today or like, you know, the people that you meet along the way, like, you know, they sort of just kind of continuously like encourage you to sort of keep doing that. Yeah, there was just, I with the record, like I just was, I don't know, it was just sort of kind of, not like burst out of me, but like there was just definitely something, you know, that I couldn't communicate in any other way than to make the music. And it kind of always flows quicker to me, like than words or like ways of communicating. Like it's easier to kind of put it into music or sound.
Also really interesting as well, because I think that as listeners of music, a lot of people look to music to try and find words to like figure out things. And one of the main influences, I guess, like listening to the album is Trish Keenan and Broadcast, who is just someone that I am so in love with her voice and so in love with Broadcast's music, because like yours, you can kind of listen to it in any scenario. I think kind of in a room by yourself is always the best kind of way to listen to it, and just allows you to like go to another world almost. But I found she had in The Wire in 2009 a quote with like psychedelia, how it allows, you know, for people obtainable by questioning what we think is real and right, by challenging the conventions of form and temper, which again, listening to your album, I just felt was so relevant and just like seeped into it so much. And I kind of love that questioning of what's real and right. With now the distance between the heart and mouth and the diary element to it in life, even just as a teenager, was that something that you kind of found that it helped you kind of figure things out and distill like how you're feeling and sort the chaos from like the reality of things, and who were maybe some of the people who like helped you with that?
Like I think as a teenager I was definitely singing, like I was singing in like more like choirs, and I was listening to a lot of music. Like one person who really comes to mind that I was listening to probably from quite a young age was like Alanis Morissette, where I was like, I can't believe she's saying this, you know, or like, is it okay to say the things that she's saying, and is it okay to show these like, you know, shades of emotion that she shows, like, you know, anger, like, you know, angst, like, you know, spite or ambition or any of the things that, like, you know, that she expresses, especially in Jagged Little Pill. I think that was like, for me, like it was a real moment and a record that I kind of held on to probably from my very early teens right through. I've always was just so impressed by people telling their truth. And you know, I think she was just somebody who really represented that to me. And then I had this kind of, you know, it's kind of an unusual thing where, you know, I didn't really realize that was something that I could do, something that I could enjoy. And I love to sing, but I didn't really know that like being a musician was something that was possible. And honestly, it's only really, like, it's really only in the past, like I've done it for many, many years, but I feel like it's only now that, you know, or in the past while, that I'm giving myself like a new layer of permission to kind of do that. But I think as well the psychedelic element, like that you're mentioning, and you know, even playing with altered areas, and like the way that like psychedelia kind of influenced us and me, like the freeing element, you know, like you're saying, like the kind of morality, it's a different type of you know, morality doesn't exist in the same way. And not to say that, you know, of course there is good and bad, but it's sort of more of a free kind of a universal, like colorful experimental space. And I think Trish Keenan, like, you know, occupies that so well, where, you know, there is such depth, and kind of in a way with her, I think it's like there's almost like a safety to her voice within all of that. Like, I feel so anchored when I'm listening to her. But yeah, it's kind of, I think those two worlds, like, you know, something like Alanis Morissette, something that's so like blatant and on the table and confessional, and then something that's so exploratory like Broadcast, like that's definitely kind of, yeah, maybe music I listened to when I was more in my teens is probably more like straight up, and then kind of going into that more psychedelic kind of world. And I do see the kind of music I'm making as trying to kind of meld somewhat those two kind of worlds. Like, I love straight up songwriting where it's just like, you know, say what you mean and try and kind of lay that down. And you know, maybe songs like to the Test or Silent Talk, I feel like that's really kind of apparent. And then being more playful, you know, like on the record with like Archaeological Longing, or like using my voice, like pitching it, or you know, finding different spaces to say things like in ways that are, yeah, just a bit more out there and a bit more experimental. And I think that's kind of probably the kind of types of worlds that like I end up wanting to bring together. Yeah, like I've always loved music, and I loved music as a teenager, but I think it was probably in my 20s when I really realized that, you know, it was something that I could be a part of. And it's really now, maybe in my 30s, that I'm kind of like, it's okay to call myself a musician. You know, I've always tried to kind of keep a career going like at the same time and hold both spaces. And I think this album has kind of given me the opportunity to like let go of some of the ideas about myself that I had in terms of, you know, being a professional or having a different type of career. It's been really kind of mind blowing. I'm like, oh right, you can do this. Like,
yeah, absolutely. And like, even like the mention of Alanis Morissette, like when she was like so in her music, so forthright and just like not apologizing for it. And then you think of like people like Sinead O'Connor. I just recently watched the documentary about her, and it's just so incredible to like, I mean, obviously there have been musicians before her who have been very forthright, but I don't think there were many musicians who were vilified in quite the way that like, say, Sinead O'Connor was, or even Alanis Morissette down to a certain degree, where people would almost kind of diminish the worth of the music. And I know, like, growing up loving those kind of people, but almost kind of having it like a secret thing to yourself, almost, because it's almost like you're then perceived to be a certain way with how you think about things. And I guess as a musician as well, like, you have, not that you have a responsibility to like inspire and influence people, certainly audiences will come to that themselves, what they take from your music. But was that something that you ever kind of felt a bit of a, not like fear of, but I guess a slight barrier to? And even when you say about like, it's only now in your 30s kind of feeling comfortable even calling yourself a musician, was there a fear of ever being so kind of open and exposing of yourself?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think that, you know, I did find, especially, you know, I have found, especially on stage, like I used it, as, you know, particularly in my 20s, as like a space to really kind of purge myself and to be very much other and to be very much, you know, maybe aggressive, or, you know, like really overt, or use my body in ways that like I really wouldn't in, you know, in everyday life. And, you know, there were times that like, you know, I felt, you know, like, what did I just do? Like, what was that? You know, I was just rolling around screaming on the ground, and like, was that okay? Like, it maybe it felt good, but like, you know, did I go too far? And, you know, just kind of trying to be comfortable with like, you know, what you're doing and why you're doing it. But like, there was definitely something always kind of inside that just had that drive, I think, like inspired by those kind of people, that was like, no, like it just has to be done. And that was kind of the feeling. But yeah, sometimes it felt dangerous or exposing or even embarrassing, you know, at different times. And you know, I certainly haven't done the craziest things, but probably for me, and maybe my way of being, it felt at times like that I, you know, was being extreme. But like, I think, you know, people like that, that, you know, inspire you, like, you know, Sinead O'Connor or Alanis Morissette, they do act as a reminder that it's okay to do that. And, you know, we've even seen Tina Turner, all the clips of her the last while, and you're just like, oh my God, you know, it's just that kind of, you're constantly trying to kind of reinforce that, like, yeah, it's okay to take up those spaces and to speak like your truth and everything and to act it out, you know. It's a very different thing that I'm doing now, but I do feel that, like, trying to make myself be brave, like standing on the stage kind of, not with nothing, I do have like a sampler and stuff, but I just kind of feel like I'm just standing there with a mic and I'm just kind of singing and there's not like a whole lot going on. And sometimes I question that, like, you know, oh, it'd be cool to have a band or a visual, or maybe I should be playing a guitar, but there's something in me saying, no, just stand there, like, and you know,
strip it back and stuff.
And like, I was, you know, have been wearing a really big hat and I've kind of tried to take that off, and my cousin was joking me, I was like, I've taken off the hat. She was like, what are you going to take off next? I was like, probably nothing, we're probably going to stop that. But like, yeah, just kind of allow myself to kind of stand in that, like, vulnerability and simplicity of it, because, you know, you think, you know, there is that, you know, the famous Sinead O'Connor performance of Mendica and stuff, and she's just there like with the mic and she's out there, and it's like there is something so powerful about that. And yeah, as kind of, I'm not, yeah, like, as, I don't know, I can have a certain kind of reserved nature to myself, but then there is this other side that just keeps, I don't know why, making me go out and try to do those things. And I think it is inspired by people like that. Yeah.
It's kind of like a bit of a release, like, yeah, just anything that, like, in your day-to-day life, because you are such a lovely and, very warm person to be around and to talk to. Like, everyone has those kind of things where they do have that, like, element to them where they're just like, I'd love to say this thing, but they're like, I should roll back just in case. And the hat thing that you mentioned, actually, that's really interesting, because it was something that I did want to just ask you kind of briefly about, because it is such a captivating image as well. And part of me, just from my own kind of like looking and seeing it, it almost, and this could be completely wrong, but almost like a character almost, because again, you are revisiting a very different version of yourself, and the hat is almost kind of not a barrier, but it is like an element that allows the audience to kind of see a difference between which Elaine is kind of talking to you. Was that kind of initially what it was?
Yeah, I think so. So like at the start, I was doing a show in Jimmy, who runs Plugged, in his garden, and I was going to do a solo set, and I had been in Dublin doing a girls rock camp actually, and then like I hadn't really had like time to rehearse, and I didn't know what the kind of, you know, I didn't really conceive myself as like a solo act or whatever. I didn't really have anything, you know, ready. I was going to play some tapes and like sing over them stuff that I had made up and just sort of see what came. But before I went down to the show, I was like, I just, you know, I knew I was going to be sitting there playing to like people that I knew. And I just kind of felt like I needed something to sort of protect me and, like you say, bring me to another space, you know, that maybe differentiated maybe the different groups I'm in and who I am every day. And I just went to a shop and I bought this hat and wore it. And then it sort of just became really comfortable. And then like in the last few weeks, I started to feel that like it became something that I felt like maybe I was using it slightly to hide, and kind of that, you know, I guess that urge to just be a little bit unadorned. And, you know, I started to take it off and I stopped putting it in my bag. I don't have it today. And I don't know why. I'm just, you know, these things, you just kind of follow your gut. Like, I just sort of feel like, no, I just, maybe I don't need to have hard lines between the people that I am. And I don't know, like, it's cool to have, you know, like, I love the silhouette of it and I love the character of it and everything. But yeah, something just told me just go up there kind of fairly as bare as I can. But yeah, I think initially it was sort of just a way to kind of have a little bit of protection. And also that feeling like if everything crashed and, you know, up at that show with Jimmy's, that like I'd have something to hide under. They won't see my cheeks burning red. Like,
and I guess as well, like with you, because when I saw you that time in the lighthouse, you didn't have the hat. Even though it is a past you, you're still the same person. Like, it, like a person is made up from different eras, different experiences, and so forth. something as well that I saw that you said about like just your process, because I know for myself, like working at home, I find it very difficult to kind of have a structure. And but I saw you had a really interesting, I think for musicians as well, I'm always very fascinated by how they work, because it just feels like something like it must be difficult to just like sit down at a desk and be like, right, today we're going to work on lyrics, or we're going to flesh this arrangement out. Was that kind of element of structure, because you were someone who like Kevin Barry was saying about the morning method, was that something very important to you to have that structure, and how was it like kind of building that routine, and did it work for you?
Yeah, it definitely worked. I think, you know, it was something that, you know, I kind of initially set myself the task to like make an hour of music in, you know, a week or two. So it was just one of those things like whatever I capture, it's going to just maybe fit into this, you know, hour of music that I'm making. And there was just something about like getting up every day and making it in a sort of a work sense. Cause like, you know, I've always been on that sort of cycle of work that, you know, it wasn't that I was just waiting for inspiration or waiting for this sort of, you know, meaningful emotion or feeling. Like I was just kind of trying to capture whatever was happening and just knowing that I'd do that again tomorrow. So like something about the weight of sitting down to write was like slightly lifted. And, you know, I think that's something that I definitely, that just gave me an in to like the process, where it just freed me up a little bit. Cause I think when I, yeah, as soon as I think too hard, you know, about anything, you know, it doesn't really flow. So yeah. And I'm definitely, you know, thinking of Rachel Lavelle's song, Sleepy Gal. I'm definitely a sleepy gal. I love that song. It's so good. So I'm definitely like best in the morning, and I just have that kind of clarity, or, you know, like some judgment in me or critical voice is like a little lessened in the morning. The feeling of the possibility of the day is like there, and I'm just a little less likely to be kind of hard on myself, and just the possibility is there. And so, yeah, so that was just, it was just this task I set for myself, and then it ended up being like a really helpful process.
That's so interesting as well, to kind of have that behind the curtain look, because it's such a separate image that I have of the album. Because for me, like songs like To The Test, just the quality of it just is so nocturnal to me. And even it's just like I just had this image of you like late at night by your desk, like, and it has that quality of, I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, I was tethered to my radio and new tapes and it, like taping songs, being like, what's this? Like, just so excited about it. Was that something that you did as well? Like, just literally ear to the radio all the time?
Yeah, 100%. Like I can just see the like black like Sanyo radio and tape deck, and yeah, I was totally tethered to it. Yeah, just like the CDs in there, and then trying to catch stuff off the radio, and it was just like a lighthouse in the room, just like clinging on to it. And like I was just in my room listening to that all the time, whatever I could get my hands on. Yeah, so I think that kind of that whole radio element, and I think that was like something that I, you know, wanted to do with the album, was sort of the songs are made by me and they have a certain style, but I kind of wanted to have like, you know, certain types of sounds like you might have on a mix, or, you know, like something like To The Test, which is kind of like I guess kind of soulful, or, you know, something more dancey and maybe something more stripped back. Like try to kind of make myself make different types of sounds, thinking like in terms of like, yeah, like a mix, like a radio mix. Mm. Yeah, I was definitely influenced by listening to like long wave radio, or listening to radio in my room, or trying to catch songs that way. And yeah.
And then as well, obviously you have a song for Mary Black.
Yeah.
I believe she was your first concert.
Yeah, I went to see her in UL when I was, I want to say like maybe five with my parents. And yeah, it was just, I know, I think it's that thing like where, you know, yeah, maybe when you are at home, like listen to the radio and cassettes and all that, like the live experience is so different and it's hard to fathom that when you're young, but just getting to see her up there and see the whole live experience, it makes an impression kind of beyond like your understanding. I think I had that kind of impression on me. I was just so wowed by the whole thing. And I had like her kind of song, Sunny, was like my song that I would always sing, like, you know, at family gatherings or like, you know, my kind of party piece. So yeah, it was really nice to bring that, like, I guess that was the first kind of song of my own that I put out in Touch Sensitive on a compilation. And that was sort of the gate, like, way into me making more and kind of going, okay, like, this is, you know, this is something that I can do. So it was just cool that was like my first concert, and then that it almost felt like a bit of a, that I could kind of take a bit of that into what I was doing, because it really inspired me, like, just to, I feel like I'm still discovering new stuff by her and just, you know, new videos and live performances and how incredible she is.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah, and like every now and again, I think as well, sometimes in Ireland we kind of take for granted the talent and the legendary singers that we have and who have come like ahead, like even Frances Black as well, like some of her songs and her voice and Mary Black's voice, just incredible. I recently as well kind of delved back into Enya. I was like, she is just like so forward thinking, like 20 years ago. But something as well that I wanted to touch on with you is obviously like improvisational music is something that is such a huge core of your music, whether it's Altered Hours, Crevice as well, which you do, Morning Veils. And I know in Cork, in Plugged, you're having the improvised music night. How did that come about? And again, as someone who, I can't play music at all, the thought of just going into a room and playing something without ever kind of pre-planning it would actually send me, I think, to an early grave. But tell me about like the origins of this night and what that kind of free reign kind of means to you.
Yeah, because like when I suppose when I arrived in Cork, like I from Tipperary and I was going to college, and I, you know, I love singing and I love music, but like, you know, I was kind of saying I didn't really think that was something that, like, yeah, I just didn't put two and two together, like, oh, I could do that, you know. And I think as well, even at that age, you're like, you're not, you know, you're 18, you're 19, you're like, I'm grown, I never learned the whatever instrument, so it's over, you know. Whereas now you would know, like, well, you could pick up anything anytime. And but I, yeah, ended up kind of friends with a lot of people who were studying music, who were playing music, and so I became into contact with a lot of people who were playing all the time, and like ended up just kind of, yeah, being in their company, and I suppose ended up playing with the band. And then there was a very strong, like you say, improv scene in Cork, especially in Plug Records, and then the Cork Improvised Music Club that was founded by Dan Walsh. I think it's like 10 years old now, that just a couple of weeks ago. And I suppose coming from that place where you sort of think, and like as you said to me, I'm not a musician, like it's like that just rings so true to me. I'm almost like, neither am I. Which is funny, people kill me when I say that, but it's like those kind of spaces just gave me the chance to be like, I can't technically play you G, or, well, okay, maybe I could play a G in a guitar, but like I can't play, you know, like a particular chord, or I don't sight read, or I don't, you know, I don't have any kind of official training or whatever, but like just following my feeling, like with certain sounds and those kind of spaces, gave me the chance to do that and to feel like, oh, you know, like sometimes it's right. And you know, when you play, hold down a key and it sounds nice with what the guitar is doing, then it's right, you know. There is no theory behind that. And in those spaces, the, you know, the space that people made for, you know, someone who's really adept at their instrument, and then like you're playing with them and they're really enjoying playing with you, even though you might feel like, you know, they are quote unquote a musician and I am not. But it was just like improv is like this great leveler where, you know, I think you could really follow your intuition and like follow your emotion, and it was like correct and it was enjoyable, and you know, you never knew what kind of shape it was going to take, and you could react to people and, you know, share that language. And I think that was really the way that I learned, or, you know, to make like sounds, really, like, you know. And then yeah, I ended up, I suppose, having like vocal loops and being able to sort of layer up voice and stuff like that, and just yeah, being encouraged by my peers and people I admired. And, you know, even I'm just thinking of Phil there, like the first Altered Hours gig, like he hopped on keys with us and he was actually in my year in college as well. And just kind of, you know, people that you look up to so much, I suppose, like accepting you in the improvisation, it was just very powerful, I think. And it's like something that, yeah, I'm so looking forward now to doing it again Thursday. But yeah, it was kind of the training ground, or it's like been a place where I can always sort of try something new and an idea that I have, and there's like no right or wrong. And I'm just so into that. Like, just, I think it's that same thing with like the audio diary. It's like there is no right and wrong. It's like, I think I just need that atmosphere for creativity to occur. Like, otherwise, you know, the shutters just come down. And I think improvisation is just perfect for that, because it's like, it's just like a trip and you're just taking it together. And it, you know, yeah, so I'm really glad that like that is the case in Cork, and that has been, because I honestly don't, like, I don't think I'd be, yeah, maybe I'd be singing, but I don't think I'd be making music the way that I am other than that. So, you know, if it weren't for that, yeah.
Because that is something that, like, I always find quite interesting. And, like, I talked to Junior Brother a couple of months ago, and just how, like, Kerry influences his music. And, like, obviously you're from Tipperary, but have lived in Cork for so long. I can't help but think that, as you're saying, like, the improv scene has just really inspired your music and your approach to it. And I think as well with the improv, everyone is kind of on a level and everyone is just supporting each other. And Cork has just had such an outrageous history of having that scene, and it continues today. What is it, do you think, because I'm always really fascinated by the relationship between environment and music especially, what is it that you think Cork kind of facilitates that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, what, I suppose when I think about it, like, I do think of like maybe particular individuals like that. Like, it's sort of like a strong, like, philosophical belief almost, you know. And I think when you have like individuals, I'm always amazed at how, like, you know, a handful of people can really kind of steer and, like, you know, like, hold up a kind of scene. And, you know, I suppose people like Jimmy providing the space, or people like Dan, or people like the Quiet Club. That's like Mick O'Shea up in the Guest House, and Danny McCarthy, who would have been doing really experimental music long before, you know, I arrived to Cork, or Vicky Langan. There seemed to be somehow, you know, these individuals like being kind of elders, or like, you know, very clearly kind of driven individuals that knew what they were doing and why they were doing it. And I think, you know, things kind of built, at least that's my impression, that things kind of built up around them and they became kind of guides. And, you know, you would see how they would do things, and it sort of just freed it up. So, and I don't know, is it that Cork, you know, is so far south and is, you know, known to be so rebellious and like outsider, that like that willingness to kind of explore. And maybe it's like, there, you know, I was going to say, like, the lack of a music industry, there's loads of people doing amazing things out of Cork, but like, I've always, you know, I've thought that, like, there's not necessarily loads of managers, and there's, you know, there are some independent labels, but there is like a small bit of a step removed maybe from, you know, people kind of immediately kind of diving into like the industry side and being really sort of interested in the culture, like the exploration side of it. And I think it's like anything, when you see your peers doing something really far out and free, and it inspires you, you're going to maybe try to get up there next week, and you're like, I'll give it a go, you know. And I think that's been the way it's been. There's definitely those, yeah, for me, those kind of cornerstones, like those people who've, like, you know, just had this huge ripple effect.
Well, I guess, like, it's just so instinctual. And even like hearing you talk about like the lack of industry and stuff, it just seems like with Cork maybe there's no real kind of commercial infrastructure in place of like how to like monetize music, which, I mean, it's such a double-edged sword, because like you want to make a career of it, but also you want to keep doing it for the fun, and when money comes into it, in most cases, there has to be like a compromise kind of element. But I know that you probably have to sound check quite soon. So I won't keep you much longer with album two. Is there kind of any plans for that? Because I do know that people have just, the album has just been so well received, and rightly so. It's such a beautiful, beautiful body of work, and I love returning to it and get something new each time. But I know that might not always be like an easy thing to like kind of make. Like you need time and you need experiences to like put into it. Is there an album too though, Elaine?
I hope so. Yeah, like there's been, I suppose, because I've ended up, you know, gigging quite a bit and representing the record, like I haven't been as, you know, sitting down every single day, but, you know, I've begun to, you know, start trying to just clear a bit of space for it. And there are some tracks, and I'm trying to just kind of tune into like, oh, what might this be about? And, you know, I have some ideas, and there are some sounds, but I don't know if that's it or do I need to start again. But my plan really is to kind of start like after this bout. I really just have things kind of dotted. So after tonight, I just hope to, a lot of my gear is actually not working, but I hope to, like, you know, replace my interface, like clean my tape machine, just kind of, you know, clean the space and just return like to the desk and just like try to have that trust. And as much as, you know, as this has kind of gone, this record's gone beyond what I thought it would be. So I was trying to kind of, you know, not necessarily let that go, but like just not take the pressure of it as much as I can, like just sort of see what comes and what sound comes. But yeah, I'd love to make another album, and there's a few different types of albums I'd love to make. Like I feel, you know, like I'd love to make a record with a group. I'd love to make a record just with a guitar. Like I'd love to make, you know, this, I kind of,
challenges.
Yeah, and I, you know, like I'm 36 now, kind of feel like, you know, obviously I'm not like, there's plenty of time, but you know, you do just get that sense like, well, if you want to make these kind of records, like I gotta just make them. And yeah, that's sort of the way I think about it. Like I'd like to, there's certain types of records I'd like to make, and like I'd like to try. So yeah, just trying to get down to that, really.
Well, that's really exciting, because I really love listening to music. I love your voice so much. It's such a warm kind of cadence as well, that it just feels very comforting, like, to listen to. And I particularly like listening to it by myself and just really kind of taking it all in, because there's so much in there between like your presence on it, the lyrics, and just the worlds that you've built around, which are, again, as someone who can't make music, I just find so mind-blowing and like just endlessly quite inspired by. But finally, the last time we spoke, we talked about karaoke. My last question to you, Elaine Howley, what is your karaoke song of choice?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, I suppose it probably is, like, I'd love to do Alanis Morissette, You Oughta Know, like, because it's just, oh my God, she just rips. And like, yeah, she's just, it's such a wild song. And yeah, I'd love to do that now in a nice little pub.
Yeah. Well, Elaine, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. It's been great to talk to you. Cool. Thanks so much. Thank you.